From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Good day, everyone. I'm Deborah, and you're listening to a Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast right here at 1510 AM Revolution Boston. You're listening also to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel, who is sharing all his wisdom throughout his years and from the medical world to his spiritual world. And for everyone out there, if you can't catch this show because it's every first Saturday at 3 p.m. on Revolution Boston, you can pick up Bernie's show Wednesday through Friday, noontime, 12 p.m. on Dream Vision 7, and you just go on the site and click the Listen Live audio. And that's Dream Visions, all one word with an S on the end, the number 7, radio.com. So Bernie would like to talk about water, religion, and health, and good day. Hey, Bernie.
Good day, Debbie.
And what about water? Most human beings are made most of water. So,
first, let me jump back to what pops into my head.
Sure.
I always said that I started a new religion called Undo. And the symbols that we use that have meaning are Band-Aid, ice, and a penny. And if you said, why a Band-Aid, I say, because it demonstrates what has been built into us, God's love of us, that if you cut your finger, you don't bleed to death. You put a Band-Aid over it, take it off a week later, and lo and behold, it's healed. And the same is true, you know, in the animal world and the plant world. You can cut off a branch, and the sap doesn't leak out and kill the tree. It knows how to heal. The other symbol, let me jump to the penny, then I'll get back to the ice. The penny, to me, reminds us of our mortality. There's Abe Lincoln, never smiling. He should lighten up, you know. And in God we trust and liberty, that we have the freedom to be who we want to be, as well as faith in our Creator. You know, I just keep saying our Creator loves us. And I'm not seeing some person sitting somewhere as God. I mean, if I had to define God, it would be conscious, loving, intelligent energy, that all those things go into creation. So you can't really describe God. I mean, it's interesting. Jung even said that if God was created, you still don't have anything. You still have a no thing. He said one times one is still one. One divided by one is still one. And that creation doesn't begin until you have one plus one. And then why the number 10 becomes so important. If you add mankind, animal life, plant life, you have 2, 3, 4. And 1, 2, 3, 4 adds up to 10 again. So out of the nothing, let's put it that way, comes the one. But you still can't describe that one. Now, what about ice? You see, this is the part that gets me in the sense of the intelligence behind creation and who figured all this out. You take a liquid and you freeze it. It becomes more dense, solid. And then what does it do? It sinks, except for one liquid, water. When you freeze water, the ice floats. Anybody who has a drink knows the ice comes to the top. Not to mention lakes and, you know, oceans and so forth. When they freeze, you see the ice, you can walk on it. And that, to me, you'd say, who figured that out? Because just think about everything freezing from the bottom up and what would happen to life on this planet if we destroyed all the life that's living at the bottom of lakes and oceans and rivers and so forth. So somewhere, as I say, this intelligence manifests itself, and we see that. And to me, water, just as you're saying, a large part of us is water, and that water just demonstrates the intelligence behind creation. Then I was reading in the Bible, just sort of arbitrarily popping it open, and I came to a place where Nicodemus goes to Jesus because he's been talking about being born again and so forth. And Nicodemus says, you know, I am a grown man. You're telling me to be born again, but I can't fit in my mother's womb. How can you accomplish that? And Jesus says, we are water and spirit. And, you know, I looked at the page and I thought, where again is that coming from? I mean, Adam wasn't made out of water. You know, he's made out of the earth, the soil. But then I stopped to think, what's he trying to tell us? And again, to me, water, I call it a role model, too. That it can be a solid, it can be a liquid, and it can be a vapor, you know, a gas. And those things can all be destructive, too. I mean, you know, you can have a tsunami, but you can also resolve a drought with the water.
Right.
So, again, it's what options we have with our life, and that if you're having a tough time, you can change, you know, who you are. You can become water instead of being ice. I mean, you can be ice and, you know, be so cold to people, but you can also be ice and protect what's going on beneath the surface. So we have a choice about how we use all our options, you might say. And then because of what I saw in the Bible, I wrote this poem. It just came, I'm laughing because a lot of times I say things and do things, and it's not something I've thought about. It just sort of comes out of me. And my wife has learned to say it comes from God knows where. And I think that's true. But it's entitled We Are Water and Spirit. You can look into a mirror and see your image. Water, and we'll get into this later, don't let me forget, water reflects your image too. But unlike a mirror, you must get close to the water and yourself to see the reflection. And you and the water must be still and untroubled by outside forces. And just as water may exist as a liquid, solid, or vapor, you can undergo continual transformation too, depending on your state of consciousness. Mm-hmm. You can choose to close your heart and become hard and cold as ice, or become sparkling diamonds on the branches of the tree of life, or protect and guard the life which exists beneath the surface. For it is only when we are willing to go beneath the surface into the stillness and depth of our being that we truly find ourselves and create the authentic path our stream should follow. As a stream of water flows over and around stones, making beautiful sounds, your bloodstream can flow over obstacles, become as destructive as a tsunami, or choose to vaporize and rise above life's difficulties, ready to fall back when needed as gentle rain softening the soil of life. One day, every bloodstream will find its way to the endless sea of life, where you will be reborn as white crystals, which descend slowly and gently onto the frozen ground, when the world experiences a drought of love, forming a blank canvas upon which the world can now create a work of art.
And this I've got goosebumps.
Well, and let me give you two quotes, one from the Tao. Nothing in the world is as soft and yielding as water. Yet for dissolving the hard and inflexible, nothing can surpass it. The soft overcomes the hard. The gentle overcomes the rigid. Everyone knows this is true, but few can put it into practice. And Lao Tzu, the best, like water, benefit all and do not compete. They dwell in lowly spots that everyone else scorns, putting others before themselves. They find themselves in the foremost place and come very near to the Tao. And that's another thing to think about. You know, water always goes down.
Mm-hmm.
What if it went up? You know, I mean, you can laugh and think, well, you know, what else could it do? There's gravity. But helium goes up. It's matter also. So all of this has been thought about. I was just reading something last night where somebody was, like, criticizing God for putting pumpkins on these little tiny vines while apples have these big trees. And they were walking through an orchard, and an apple fell and hit this fellow in the head. And the guy with him said, "Now you understand how wise God is. What if that was a pumpkin?" And, you know, so again, when you stop and look at life, you begin to realize, you know, who figured this out and who, you know, thought about this. And then to get back to the stillness, that I was born an ugly duckling due to health problems my mother had and couldn't survive a cesarean section. I mean, it's a story I didn't learn till I had grown up. And I mean this literally. Nobody ever told me about what went on around my birth. And the family album photographs just show a covered carriage. So I assumed I was sleeping. But I had a grandmother who really saved my life. I mean, not that my parents didn't love me, but they didn't know what to do with this kid they were sent home with, which wasn't a kid, you know, because of how I looked. So my mother told me when I found out about this that my grandmother took me and poured oil all over me and massaged me and pushed everything back where it belonged. So I knew I became the most loved kid on the planet. But when the story, the ugly duckling, came in front of me, I realized that poor kid, he didn't have a grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
So his mother throws him out of the house. But what is beautiful is that he didn't walk away resenting his mother. Because I heard, well, people, as well as letters I get from people. You know, this is a quote. "My mother's words were eating away at me and maybe gave me cancer." You see,
they had
parents, you know, "You're a failure, you embarrass us." I mean, that is beside the rejection and abuse, you know, that some kids go through is just horrendous. And but the ugly duckling goes off and doesn't spend his life hating his mother and letting her words eat away at him. And one day he's sitting on a still pond, and he sees some swans on the other side of the pond. And, you know, in his heart he wishes he was a swan so his mother wouldn't have thrown him out of the house. And then he looks down into the still pond, and guess what he sees? "I'm a swan."
Mm.
Then I came across a story that Joseph Campbell used to explain almost the same theme. He said, a tiger is giving birth and chasing some goats, you know, to have them for dinner. She goes into labor, delivers the baby, and dies. The goats, and that's so true of animals, they don't then punish her baby. They come back and they raise the little tiger.
Right.
And he grows up thinking he's a goat because he can't see, you know, himself. So he eats grass. He's scrawny. He tries to bleat, you know, and imitate them. And then one day, another tiger comes running across the field chasing these goats and sees him. So he stops. He says, "What the hell are you doing here? You're a tiger. You're not a goat." He says, "Come with me." And where does he take him again? To a still pond. And he says, "Look, you're a tiger. You look like me." And Campbell said it's like meditation and yoga, that when you quiet your mind, that's when you can see, in a sense, the truth. And this is something that I try to get across to people, that you're never going to know who you are until you quiet your mind and quiet your life. Then you get a chance to say, you know, when I look in the mirror, it's me. And if you're so busy, though, you know, doing, you never identify your true self. You never have that authentic life. And I see this, unfortunately, too often with people. When they learn they have a life-threatening illness, that's when they quiet the turbulence. You know, they eliminate it from their life. And I always say, you eliminate what's killing you, don't kill yourself. But when you eliminate what's driving you nuts, and begin to love yourself and your life and have a sense of humor again, then the whole world changes, as well as yourself. The world changes because you've changed. So
exactly.
What you now see in the world, because I'm saying this to people all the time, what you see in others resides within you. So if you think I'm wonderful, it's because you're wonderful. And therefore, I'm happy to coach you because, you know, I know you've got the talent in you, or you wouldn't connect it to it when I'm speaking to you. The other, I think, that the water represents, it's in every religion. I don't remember all the things I've read, but I remember reading how from the Muslim faith, Christianity, Judaism, there's always the water stories, you know, from the Red Sea to baptism to who knows what. And I think, again, the water is symbolic of the cleansing, you know, of cleaning ourselves and starting again, washing away the past, if you will.
Right. And we don't have to hold on to our childhoods or anything that is painful there in experience.
Yeah. It's hard to let go of the childhood because it's hypnotic. I mean, what you hear your parents say, you know, when you're in that vulnerable time of your life. But it's still, as you're saying, possible. And I always say, don't wait for disaster, because too often that's when people say, oh, look, you know, this horrible thing happened, and, you know, I woke up and went out and bought some pretty clothes and colors that my mother never dressed me in, and, you know, on and on and on. But it's to tell people not to wait for the disaster. The word sacred was in the introduction. I'd say learn from the sacred wisdom of the past and don't wait for a disaster.
I love that. Well, we need to take our first break, Bernie. So everyone out there, stay with us. We are with Dr. Bernie Siegel. If you'd like to connect with him, go on his site, BernieSiegelMD.com. Just as it sounds, Siegel is S-I-E-G-E-L, BernieSiegelMD.com.
Do you have a charity you'd like to help by raising money? Having a fundraising gold party is a fun, unique way to accomplish just that. It's as easy as inviting friends, relatives, and neighbors to bring their gold and or sterling silver jewelry they'd like to sell. They don't have to buy anything. It's the reverse. The attendee receives a check for their jewelry, and the organization receives 15% of the proceeds on the day of the event. The Party of Gold Company is women-owned and Better Business Bureau accredited. Since we have no overhead, our prices are better than jewelers. Have a fundraiser for auxiliaries, committees, schools, baseball leagues, churches, and nonprofit foundations. For more details or to book your fundraiser, call Deborah Bove, Gold Specialist, at 508-431-1959. That's 508-431-1959. Or Deborah B. at partyofgold.com. Do you wish to have inner peace while living in challenging times? Are you unhappy and don't know why? Life consists of either a path of love or fear. When we choose a path of love, we learn and grow. If we choose a path of fear, we stay stuck in negativity. The time is now to heal ourselves and the world by choosing a different way. Through the path to your power, your inner light, you will find self-love and experience amazing changes. You can have inner peace, wonderful relationships, good health, and a flow of abundance. Complete the circle of illuminating love using our tools and learn how to retain your power throughout life. To learn more about the path to your power and the Divine Love Within consultations, call Deborah Bove at 508-226-1723. Or go to lovebyintuition.com.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, Inspiring True Stories of Healing, Gratitude, and Love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, Daily Messages of Inspiration, Hope, and Love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. We're a Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast right here at 1510 AM Revolution Boston, where we reach all those New Englanders out there that may not have internet. And please go on Dream Vision site, Dream Visions, all one word with an S on the end, the number 7radio.com. You'll see all of Bernie's times because we have 5 affiliates, so the show just keeps on giving. And you can download with iTunes onto your phone, all of that, bless you, as well as archives that are right on our site that you can listen to at your leisure. So, Bernie, don't you feel that if everyone knew that they had the choice to change or the choice to let go of those things that are painful and know that we're not separate, with the love, holding the love, that they can change their world?
Well, the thing that I found upsetting, because I came from a background of love. You know, I mentioned my grandmother, my parents. I mean, they loved me. They didn't
sure.
have to like what I was doing. I always want to clarify that for people, that I knew they loved me even if they didn't like my behavior that day. so I knew, well, as Robert Frost said, home is a place that when you go there, they have to take you in. So you knew you had that. But what I found was when I wanted to help people survive life-threatening illnesses, they were afraid of failing. You see, if you said read a book, draw a picture, answer questions, sit in a group, talk about how you're feeling, oh, I might not do it right. I mean, I've had people have their children draw pictures for them that I asked them to do.
Oh.
And they're supposed to get over a life-threatening illness, and they're afraid of the grade they're going to get in art. You know, I mean, it made no sense to me. But I began to learn that they weren't brought up with love, so they're very much afraid of doing things wrong and more criticism, and, you know, that was their life pattern. But I see this, in a sense, from all authority figures, you know, teachers, parents, clergy, doctors, that you've got to reparent people, help them rebirth themselves. Because once they feel worthy, then they're not afraid to take a chance, you see. Because
right.
then it's not about I'm doing it wrong, I'm getting a poor grade. Then it's about participating, taking responsibility. I always read a poem that a woman wrote after she had a mastectomy about seeing herself in the mirror and so forth and all the changes. But then she goes on to talk about the positive changes she sees in herself too, and that it ends with the canvas is not finished, there's more color on the palette. And that's what I try to get across to people, that if you see yourself as a work in progress, then it isn't, I did it wrong, I'm a mess, I failed. It's, you're a work in progress. You keep at it. You keep trying. 900 years ago, Maimonides, Jewish philosopher and physician, said, if people took as good care of themselves as they do their animals, they would suffer fewer illnesses. Now, when I read that, I thought, oh, my God, 900 years later, I'm saying the same thing in a different way. Because I know people who, quote, Doug and I now smoke in the yard. We're not killing our cats anymore. We hope you're not killing yours. See? He said, we love our cats more than the convenience of smoking indoors. Now, that gets published in a pet magazine. And then my letter doesn't get published because I said, you're telling people it's okay to kill themselves. Why not tell them to love themselves as much as they do their pets? I see this, you know, with kids in school where you draw a picture. A lady wrote a beautiful poem about it called Purple. And the teacher's screaming at her, tents aren't purple. Purple's the color for people who are dying. She said in second grade when Mr. Barta said, draw a picture, I left my paper blank. See, what's the teacher going to do now? He comes over to her desk, and she said, he put his hand on my shoulder and said, the snowfall, how clean and white and beautiful. Boom. And I saw this in my office as a doctor, that when people were obviously self-destructive, and I knew they were doing it to be rejected again, you know, for me to say, get out of here, you're killing yourself, why should I give you another appointment? That's what their parents had told them. But I would always give them a hug and say, come on in, you know, and see you in a week. And sometimes I would say to them, you know, I'd laugh and I'd say, look, I know you're trying to get me to reject you. Like the lady who lit a cigarette under a no-smoking sign. I mean, it's right over her head, you know. And, I walk out, and I'm laughing, and she's wondering, why is he laughing? Why isn't he yelling at me? You know, I'm not supposed to be smoking air in the waiting room. What? And, I tell her I'm laughing because it's obvious you're trying to get me to reject you. But I refuse. And 6 months later, she starts taking care of herself because she realizes I'm worth something. You know, as I've said to suicidal kids, you're a child of God. I love you. You need a father, I'll be your father. And
right.
So, and the what Maimonides made clear to me, because I thought that was significant, you see, the role of religion in health. Billy Graham, yeah, I was reading the paper this probably a couple of years ago, and somebody wrote to him and said, does God want me to have cancer? Now, as soon as I saw that, my reaction was, no. But Billy Graham said, not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, what is he saying to this guy? And when you read his answer, he is basically saying, God may give you this disease to bring you closer and make you more spiritual. Now, you see, to me, that's a personal choice, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
I mean, I meet people who don't say, okay, why me? But it's more the try me and what have I learned from this? And then they go on to really become a teacher to other people with life-threatening illnesses and so forth. But, you know, for me to read that God gives you a cancer doesn't work. I mean, it just creates more guilt, shame, and blame. What did I do wrong?
Right.
And a matter of fact, I mean, two popes, one declared that the clergy should not marry young men because they make better soldiers. That's when St. Valentine got into trouble. See, he married couples who were in love with each other when the Pope had said, don't do this. So he suffered. And then when the smallpox vaccination came out, Pope Leo XII declared, do not vaccinate yourself. God decides who gets smallpox. So if you decide to vaccinate yourself, then you don't go to heaven. Now, those rules have been changed, okay?
And yes. Not, thank you know, God they have been.
Yeah, but again, you see, when you think that way, this gets into people's unconscious and subconscious. Because I always say, if you walk out of the house or your office or your church and you can't find your car keys, does that mean God wants you to walk home? You know,
right.
Everybody laughs at me, like, are you nuts? I say, you go look for your keys, then what did Maimonides say? See, if you lose your health, what do? If you find what your neighbor has lost, you return it to him. So if you lose your health, go look for it. And I think that's a wonderful way to approach it rather than it's punishment or you deserve this. You lost something. How can we find that again? Say?
Right.
And then it's about how do you contribute to life, what I call survival behavior, that when you begin to see life in a more spiritual way because you have decided to, not because God did this to me, but the difficulties then become your teachers, become your blessings. Let's put it that way. I always say a curse can become a blessing. See, I was brought up with that kind of motto, which drove me nuts. I mean, you know, you have to think as a kid, if you come home after having a horrible day at school and you say to your mother, Ma, I walked in the kitchen, I had a horrible day at school. It was meant to be. God is redirecting you. Something good will come of this. My mother would say that to me.
Mm-hmm.
And what was my feeling? She doesn't care about me, you know. I need a hug. I need her to, you know, do something, call the school, whatever.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, what I learned was, after talking to God in my bedroom about my mother, was that I don't know what the future is going to be. So maybe my mother was right. And then things would start happening, and I'd realize, hey, if, you know, the thing I didn't like hadn't happened, this good thing wouldn't happen. So I realized there was wisdom in her words.
Right.
And I wish everybody was brought up with what I call mottos to live by, not mottos to die by, because I've met those people too, you know, and what their parents said to them that really, in a sense, traps them because they don't expect anything good to ever happen. So,
right. Well, when they realize... Let me
add this as a statistic, aside from religion, that Harvard students in one study were asked, did your parents love you? About 35 years later, they were looked up. And those who said my parents didn't love me, 98% had suffered a major illness in the intervening years. Of those who said my parents did love me, about 24% had suffered a major illness. So you see how all these things begin to come together. You know, whether it's parents, religion, your doctor, if you feel loved, you know, if God is your resource, if your parents loved you, you feel worthy. And then you make decisions that relate to your health. You know, you take care of yourself. But if you're not worth anything, you're satanic, you're a sinner, then, you know, who cares if you're an addict or whatever, you know, because you're rewarding yourself because of all the punishment you've received, and it just gets crazy.
Right.
But when people grow up with love, then the difference happens. And I was just reading something. This was from an American Indian. They didn't mention his name, but he was saying that we're all acting like CEOs, you know, like the executive offices of companies interested in our, you know, making money and not caring about the planet and anything else. And he said, and I thought it was so interesting from my life experience, we all need to be like grandparents, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And care about and for each other. If this planet is going to survive, we all need to be like grandparents. And I think that's very true. Yes, there are loving parents, but in the intervals, you know, intervening years while your kids are growing up, you learn a lot. I mean, our oldest, I always remember him saying to me, how come they don't have to do what I had to do? We have five children. And I said to the oldest, it's because I learned that many of the rules I had for you, you know, are meaningless and don't make any sense.
and you know, were open with them about that.
I learned. Yeah, he could forgive me, but I learned that, you know, all the rules and regulations, they weren't meaningful or significant. And then you, with experience, learn what's important, and then you become the grand parent. And if you continue to live on, you become great as well as grand. And you now have learned from life experience. So
right.
You know how to teach your friends and family and everybody else around you. And I've seen this in my own reaction to watching our children being born. I was was a surgeon, did a lot of pediatric surgery. So when our kids were born, I was more concerned that they didn't have any, you know, anomalies in their body and wanted to examine them. And the nurses would look at me like, this is your child. Why aren't you loving it instead of examining it? And I could tell you, when a grandchild is born, it never occurred to me to, you know, check them over. All you want to do is grab them and love them.
Sure.
No matter what could be wrong with them, they're going to be loved by you. And I think that's the part we all need to understand. And my hope is that in the role of religion, that everyone would feel like a child of God.
And that we're not separate. Many people feel as though God and themselves are separate when we're not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in the public eye a lot, and there's one lady that I like. I mean, I get a kick out of her and the dialogue, because she's willing to dialogue with me, but as far as she's concerned, I'm going to hell.
Really?
I'll tell you why. Something very simple. Because I don't have all the beliefs that she has, you see, and who the Savior is and everything else. But I had written something. There's a book for recently married couples that we have a copy of in the house many years ago. And one of the stories I just loved because it was so touching. It was Adam and Eve are in the garden, you know, and all the things that go wrong, okay? They eat from the tree of life. And God says, look, to Adam, he said, look, you know, I'm laughing now because, you know, God comes up and says, I didn't realize blondes were a problem. You know, if you want a brunette, I'm giving you a brunette this time. But he says, you know, we can have Eve leave. She's the one who led to your getting into trouble. And you can stay. But Adam says, and I love that line, no, wheresoever Eve is, Eden is. Mm-hmm. That really touched me. He loves her. And where she is, he is his Garden of Eden. And so I put that in a newspaper article because I thought it was really reflecting on love. And, of course, this woman writes to me saying, you don't know what you're saying. The Bible doesn't say that. Blah, 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 blah. You're sinning. You're going to hell. You know, blah, blah, blah. And I love the fact that she at least is willing to email back to me and write to me because right. I start, you know, dialoguing with her. I mean, even things like what happened to all the people who were, you know, here before Jesus? Where are they? You know, I mean.
Right. Now hold that thought, Bernie,
right.
because we need to take our break.
Okay.
Well, I want to know what you want to share. Everyone stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Songbirds with Dr. Jean Schweitzer will show us how intelligent pulses continuously flow in and out of us, creating a union between spirit and form, and how we can experience them as code breakers to live in harmony with ourselves and the universe. Part of Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, Songbirds is every second Saturday at 3 p.m.
You don't see them on the streets. In fact, you're probably not aware of them at all. But there are 100,000 of them right here in Massachusetts. They're homeless children. Child and family homelessness is a crisis in our community. Homeless kids are often transient, staying in shelters when they can, and even living in cars with their families. So they're out of sight, and unfortunately, out of mind. Horizons for Homeless Children is here to help. We're dedicated to improving the lives of homeless children and their families with programs and services to help kids learn and grow and help their families return to self-sufficiency. Join us in making a difference. Become a volunteer or make a donation. Visit horizonsforhomelesschildren.org or call 800-560-7702. That's horizonsforhomelesschildren.org or 800-560-7702.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show, Saturdays 2 to 3 p.m. Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Saturday 2 to 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Would you like to be a radio star? Now there's a show that allows holistic business owners to test the radio wave waters with ease. Host your own show on the Global Holistic Exchange. Send your message over the Greater Boston airwaves and internationally via the Internet. For more information, contact Deborah Beauvais, Deborah at DreamVision7Radio.com or call 508-226-1723, 508-226-1723. The Global Holistic Exchange is all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Saturday at 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast right here at 1510 AM Revolution Boston and Dr. Bernie Siegel and his Mind Health Matters radio show. If you'd like to connect with Bernie, purchase his books, read his articles, I'll go right on his site, BernieSiegelMD.com. Siegel is S-I-E-G-E-L, all one word, BernieSiegelMD.com. Now, Bernie, before the break, you were just starting to talk of all the people that lived before Jesus.
Yeah.
Go right ahead.
It's just that, you know, she's talking about who's going to hell and what we believe. And, yet, as I said to her, what about all the people who were born before Jesus ever lived? Where are they? Then I think about people like the Dalai Lama of Gandhi, Confucius, Buddha. I mean, here are people who are helping to heal the world and giving us, again, mottos to live by, words to live by. Where are they? It's hard for me to believe that we would have a God who would put them in hell. And my feeling is that, God loves us. However, there are people who need words, what you call fundamentalism, So this woman can immediately open the Bible and say, here, see, what you said isn't true. Look what it says here. Now, what I like is dialogue. I always say I like the Fiddler on the Roof style, see, because, hey, if I were a rich man, would it spoil some eternal plan, It's okay to say, hey, God, wait a minute here, And really to look at the wisdom within the religion. Because, again, Joseph Campbell said it in that way. Use it as a guidebook. So, yes, I love what Jesus has to say. When I was criticized down in Tupelo, Mississippi, for being satanic and occult, because I taught meditation and Satan could take over your images. See, that's the part that I can't believe people can't feel enough inner wisdom and power that if they close their eyes and do guided imagery, Satan is going to take over.
I know. Well, they're in fear.
Yeah, right. So they need the words to give them security. This minister who said to everybody in Tupelo, do not attend this lecture, I said to him, see, he was at least willing to dialogue with me. Mm-hmm. And so I got to talk to him on the phone. And I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I will give a lecture based on Jesus's words. I will not say anything that Jesus hasn't said. And then he was willing to, give me a little room and talk with me and even show up at the lecture. And I mean, those are messages like, he who seeks to save his life will lose it. He who's willing to lose his life will save it. When you become what others want, you lose your life. When do you save it? When you find your true life and calling and way of contributing love. If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. And if you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. And again, it's dealing with your feelings. Let your heart make up your mind is a wonderful line from a song. So it's, the narrow path and, it's finding your way. There are difficulties, but you find your way. And, that's when I say the guidebook that the Bible and other religious writings and spiritual writings teach me so I don't have to have a disaster in order to write my own book. Because that's the part that I find insane. And often in books I've written, I've put in the, introduction saying there's nothing new in this book. I am modernizing the messages, of survival behavior so you can understand them and apply them to your life. But there really isn't anything new. And yet, the books keep piling up around me that everybody keeps sending me because look what I've learned,
Right.
I had a divorce. I had cancer. I lost my job. And look what I learned. Yeah. See, that's what they need to learn, that like my mother said, the curse could become a blessing. When you're hungry, you go get nourishment. So when something happens in your life, you seek nourishment on a physical, emotional, spiritual level. And then you become changed by it. But, even I was just reading something by Helen Keller, who I love. I mean, see, there's a real teacher. Here's somebody who from the age of 4 is blind and deaf. She's not mad at God.
Right.
She didn't curse God. She said God disciplines us, So she is learning. And she said, yes, there is suffering. But good things can come out of the suffering, too. Yeah, the country western song, I'm a piece of coal, but I could be a diamond someday. See, when you take coal and put it under pressure, it turns into a diamond. And that's what she learned and ends up graduating from college with honors. That kind of blows my mind. Somebody who's blind and deaf is capable of graduating with honors from college. But, she could have sat home and cursed God and screamed and yelled and done everything else. And I'm not against anger. Don't get me wrong. There are times people got well when they got mad at God.
Right.
God said, I want some help here. But my comment is, let me just add this one thing, that you know, God answers prayers, but sometimes the answer is, it's time for you to do something. You know, like the woman in labor. If you're full term, hey, you got to give birth. If you're premature, I'll step in and help you. And people need to look at that and realize, as I say, at times it's up to them to make changes and to do things. That you don't just sit back and say, okay, you know, God, fix this, do that. You have to be a participant in creation. And when you do what you love, then you are creating a healthier life. Say Monday morning, we have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. But when you're doing what you love, then you're not working. You're creating. And when you're creating, your body gets that message that I love my life and I love my body, and amazing things happen.
Right. And trusting that they are going to happen. That's what I love. I love doing, you know, listening to the messages and implementing the plans, which is the action, and then watching how the universe brings it all together.
You know, you're familiar with our latest book, A Book of Miracles.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel when I reread that, and I've read it many times because I love the stories, but it suddenly occurred to me that when these people were choosing life, you know, not what was just good for them, but choosing life, what is good for everyone, and living that message, that's when wonderful things happen. You know, when they had that faith, and when they did what was best for everyone, then the coincidences happened, which were no coincidences, and the miracles occurred, from saving lives to just, you know, wonderful little things happening. And just so people understand, it's not just about diseases going away. It's just things happening that you never expected to happen. And I think that happens when, as I say, you choose life. And that's the message we're given from the Bible, not to choose what's good, but to choose life.
Right.
And then everybody benefits, and the people you need to meet to have things happen show up. And, you know, the no coincidences is really true.
Absolutely. And it's interesting when you see two people. I know two people both had heart attacks at a young age. One is angry and the other one is elated and looks at it as a gift.
Right. Yeah. And that's why it's within us. We have to make that choice. It's easier if you're brought up with parents who have shown you how to make it a gift, if you know what I mean. Because I always say, life is fair. People are always complaining it's unfair. I say it's not unfair, it's difficult. And if you haven't been trained how to deal with difficulties, yeah, then you get mad. But see, why do I like anger? Because it's an energy. So I don't mind when people are angry of the heart attack, your book, your whatever. I say, okay, let's use that energy. Because if I came in the room and they're sitting there depressed, then I can't get them to do anything. Say, I'm going to die. What's the point? Well, I've met men who have committed suicide because they were told they can't work anymore, you know, because they were sick.
Right.
Now, you know, one of them was sitting in front of me when he said this, and I said, you have a wife and two children. How about them? I mean, that never occurred to him, you know, that was a reason to live. He was living to earn a living, to pay the bills, to provide a house, And the women, of course, live longer because they're in the relationship, but they forget about themselves too often.
Mm-hmm.
So I always say, when the kids leave home, then mama dies because now there's nothing to do. But we have to be our own children too, if you know what I mean. I call it reparenting yourself. I mean, that loving yourself, seeing yourself as your child also, and be kind and loving to yourself.
Right.
Yeah, I'm always saying build a shrine in your house to yourself. Put your own photographs around the house with mottos to live by. And then when you walk around the house, you're getting therapy. And you can put, obviously, pictures up of anybody else who's loved you too, from parent, school teacher, doctor, neighbor, whatever. I mean, if somebody made a difference in your life, put the picture up. You know, it could be Mother Teresa and say, okay, I'm going to try to act like her. whatever it is, have it there and keep focusing and working on it. Because you have to rehearse and practice if you're going to get to be the person you would like to be.
That's right. Yeah. So we only have a couple more minutes. What would you like to leave the listeners with today, Bernie?
I'd say to remember that they are. Well, the best way is to say, how would you introduce yourself to God when you get to heaven?
That's good.
And I'll test you. What would you say?
I would say, I am a glorious soul, full of love, and I am here. I have arrived.
And I'd say, come back when you know who you are. Because, you know, what I try to get across to people is not to separate themselves from the divine.
Right.
We're all made of the same thing. So
exactly.
When they say, who's next, you can say, God's child or God. You know, that you're made of that same creative energy and force.
Right.
And then they say, okay, come on in. And I would just hope everybody would realize that. And as I say, we're one family. I always add all the same color inside. You know, when you read all the papers and what's been going on, you know, how we kill each other. There are more homicides than suicides. Boy, that surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
We kill more people than we commit suicide. And again, you know, what we're seeing are the differences. We need to see the similarities, that we are a family, and be kind to each other. Yeah, this is a statement, maybe a good one to close with, from a gentleman named Pancho Searles. I read about him in a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if you want to be a rebel, be kind. I love it.
Mm.
Like Gandhi, he drives people crazy.
Yeah.
Because he says to them, I love you, you know. And
right.
When he was in jail because of the trying to quiet the Occupy people and not have conflict with police, teaching them to meditate, the police put a bunch of them in jail. And he cleans his jail cell, leaves a toothbrush and napkins for the next prisoner,
mm-hmm.
a note for the police, I love you, you see. And Gandhi did that with the British and drove them crazy. So I'd say kill with kindness, torment with tenderness, and love your enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Love them anyway.
Right. Very good. I love that. And so until next week, or next time, should I say, everyone out there, we'll see you next month. And again, Dream Vision 7, Bernie Show is Wednesday through Friday at 12 noon, and it's 12 noon and 12 a.m. twice a day, so you can get as much as you can of Bernie's wisdom. Thank you, Bernie.
Oh, bless you, Debbie.
Bless you.
I'm already thinking about what I want to say next time.
I know you are, and that's good because we get it all creating here.
Thanks.
All right.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.
Please join us on Skydance Astrology, the key to your soul's purpose, with esoteric astrologer Charlene Rose Johnson, the third Sunday of every month at 8 p.m. Charlene will discuss how this ancient key of the wisdom traditions works and will conduct sample interpretations of this language of the soul. Your spiritual purpose need not be a mystery. For information about obtaining oral readings via phone or Skype or full written reports, please go to the SkyDanceAstrology.com webpage. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.